You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down, featuring in-depth discussion and interviews with stand-up comedians on the art of stand-up comedy. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down.
All right. Welcome to another exciting episode of Stand Up, Sit Down. I'm your host, Nick Perdue. And today in the studio, I have a hilarious, super talented, super funny black man, Clayton Thomas.
I'm right here. It goes down like that, folks. What's going on?
How are you?
I love this beat, yo.
Yeah?
This beat is dope.
It's good? So you want to use it for your intro music now every time you go on stage?
I actually would.
You can't because we have a copyright.
I know. So I was just thinking about
that's
that.
It.
Yeah. Man, thanks for building me up and letting me down. Yes. That was just like my dad. Like, I'm going to Disneyland. He changed his mind.
Disneyland burnt down. That's what happened. So let's just jump right into it, Clayton.
Let's go. The music's not going to stop before you start talking.
It will. Okay. It just fades out.
Making sure.
But you're from the great city of Detroit.
Yes.
Right, which is going through a little turmoil right now. But you know, you guys will be back on top. Detroit Rock City.
Here's the thing, man. They always say that in the news. My city is doing fine. I'm the king. First and foremost, man, the city of Detroit, just like any other city that goes through financial straits or struggles, that's one section that you see. Mm. There are people in Detroit that aren't even affected by any of that. Trust me.
Okay, but the city is
as a
default
whole,
or something right now.
Put it like this. For example, if your apartment building went into foreclosure, that has nothing to do with your actual pockets.
That's true.
So as a whole, as the city is concerned, maybe whatever is reported income-wise, we're doing bad. But it's a lot of uncalculated, unreported income. I'm going to leave it at that. But yeah, my city is doing fine. Don't believe anything you read, man.
Okay. So what was growing up in Detroit like?
It was amazing for me because, and this goes back to the news, whenever you see something on the news, like people always say, oh, Detroit looked bad. Oh, man, y'all got 8 Mile out there? It's like, where they shot 8 Mile, I've never seen that part of the city ever. Mm. Like, I grew up in a nice area, west side of Detroit, 6 Mile Evergreen, beautiful. Mm. Now, the east side, completely different. But the side that I grew up on, amazing.
Nice.
I had everything I needed, man. My parents worked hard. I was the typical American boy in Detroit that had everything.
Okay.
Can't even front. Like, a lot of people will complain, like, yeah, man.
Struggle.
Had to struggle, man. You know what I mean? Never had a hug in my life. My family loved the hell out of me. I had everything that I could possibly want. Every Christmas, every birthday. I had friends, recess, field trips. It was great.
Well, you were living the good life in Detroit, huh?
Amazing.
Okay, and so you went to Oak Park High School.
Wow. fast forward to you doing your research. Yeah, I went to Oak Park High School, man. Oak Park Knights, class of 04, living that life. Right. You understand me?
There you go. So were you the funny kid, or were you like the real bad kid, you know, the old kid who had it all, so he was just bad just to, you know, prove himself?
Here's the thing. I was not voted class clown. I was always, you know, funny with my peers, but I was like the unstandout. Like, you know, you got the popular crowd, then you got the semi-popular crowd, then you got the nerds. I tried to blend the semi-popular and the nerds together. I was that guy. Because the public is like 10 of them. Man. Then you got the semis and the nerds. I would kick it with these guys who now, 10 years later almost, these guys have their own businesses, doing prominent in life. Yeah. Meanwhile, the popular kids, either in jail, got 1,000 babies. So
junkies.
I was glad to be the crowd. But this girl, Brittany B, I forget the last name. She got class clown, right? Mm. And this is how I am, man. So I'm on Facebook. You know, I'm doing comedy out here. A lot of things are going on with me right now. So I'm on Facebook, and I see her on Facebook. I'm like, hey, what's up, class clown? And she was like, that's you. I see what you're doing. I'm like, you're damn right. Man, I'm cleared out the message, boy. That was it. I win. That's all I wanted.
So, yeah, as long as she know
that I'm the class clown.
You know, that she really wasn't doing anything. She really wasn't doing high school, you know, and now, you know.
Yeah. I'm satisfied with that because it made you go harder. Whenever you don't get voted something,
that's true.
It makes you want to become that in real life.
That's true. That's true. So, and then because you went to Wayne State University.
Man, this guy is on it. I love what you guys are doing here. This is perfect. Because, you know, a lot of times you do an interview and people are like, so, tell me about you, man. You're like, You don't have any research. This is great. I went to Wayne State for about 2 years. Mm. And the second semester, I was more so like, okay, I got to get out of here. Because I had already started doing comedy and I wasn't even paying attention to the work anymore. I'm just like listening to the teacher thinking of jokes. Like, I think it'd be funny if I said that. Like, every day in class, I just stopped going to school because my major is radio, TV, and film anyway. Okay. And fast forward, end up doing my own radio show, start learning how to do production stuff. So I kind of learned my degree without going through all the Gen Ed requirements.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to Wayne State. Y'all not getting this $1,000 that I owe y'all. I want you to know that. Tell them to stop calling me and my mama.
Yeah, they're definitely going to check out this interview now. Oh, okay, Clayton on stand-up, sit down.
Yeah.
Doing big things.
Hey, so where's our money? That's what they, it's not coming. That's the beautiful thing about dropping out early is you don't owe that much money.
That's true.
But you don't really want to give them what you owe just out of principle.
Yeah. Because I didn't even finish.
You know? I didn't finish.
I wasn't even close to being finished.
I was nowhere even near my actual major. I had so many gen eds to go, yo. It was...
Let the government pay it for that.
Well, I don't want to talk about the government, just in case. You know what I mean? Got some unresolved issues.
Oh, let me stop. the government's shut down right now anyway, so they ain't
paying. But when they come back up, I don't need them looking for me.
So, all right, so you said that you started doing comedy while you were in college. So, like, what was the thing that really prompted you to start doing stand-up?
Well, I actually started comedy my senior year in high school, and then I continued during college, but... The thing that made me pick it up, man, is I got tired of getting told how funny I was and going and looking at TV and seeing all these guys and be like, I am them. Why am I not them? I'm here in Detroit doing nothing. So I remember like it was yesterday, one of my best friends, Ron and Aaron, I was in their basement. And this is the season of Comic View. I don't know if you ever watched Black Entertainment Television's Comic View. I don't know why I keep looking at the white guy in the book. But BET Comedy View, I'm watching in the basement, and I was like, man, I wanna do that. And Ron was like, you funny, man, but you ain't TV funny.
Wow.
And I was like, and that next week we had like an event at the high school where comedians came, because I was a nerd. Like, I was on every committee, and I was the president. Mm. So this particular club, they brought a comedy show, and I went up to one of the comedians, and I was like, hey, man, I do comedy too. And he was like, oh, really? Yeah. I was like, yeah. I do it all over the place. He was like, oh, where you perform at? I was like, you ever heard of the Blue Bar? And he was like, no, I never heard that. I'm like, I'm all over there. I'm every night. My auntie owned it. He was like, where is it? I'm going to go check it out. I'm like, well, it burned down. But, you know, it was a cool spot to kick it at. Anyway, I would love to open up for y'all, man. Do some time. He was like, all right, cool. Go ahead. And I get in front of my entire student body, which at that time was like 500 people. And I was so nervous that I'm standing in front of them, and the first thought that came to my head was to talk about what really goes on at the school. So it was this fat security guard named Mr. Stevenson. And I was like, look at Stevenson, old fat ass. And then they just started laughing. I was like, yeah, I was telling us go to class. I'm like, why don't you go to class? If you went to class, maybe you wouldn't be working here. Laughed. And I was like, hey, y'all, we about to get the show started. Like, I left right after that. Appreciate the laugh track. A little off with the timing, but you're doing your thing. I appreciate it. But it was dope, man. So ever since then, comedy.
Yeah, so that was your first show?
First show.
Wow. Standing ovation?
No.
Close.
It was a hard clap.
Okay.
The hard clap is what got me through.
Okay, so you did what, like a minute and a half or something? It wasn't even that long?
It felt like forever, but it might have been like at the most 2 minutes.
Okay.
Because I talk fast, so it might have even been a minute and 30 seconds. It was quick, but I got the point across. It was good.
And they didn't say anything about you cussing?
No. Because they were so caught up in the laugh, it was like, oh, man, can you believe he just said that about Stevenson? Yeah. And then I was off stage before anybody could go tell somebody. So it's like,
gotcha. There you go. Okay.
Humble beginnings, man.
So, and then now the first show after that, like your first like show in a comedy club, what was that like?
Here's the thing, man. Well, as you know, well, you might not know. In Detroit, we only have two comedy clubs right now. We have Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle and Joey's Comedy Club, which I frequent in both as I continue doing comedy. But my next show was at a place called Black Star Bookstore. Black Star Bookstore. I went to this spot called Coney Island, which is a famous underground chain of late night restaurants. You go, it's like a Denny's. So I went in there and I saw a flyer for it. It was like, yo, comedy, poetry, and music, open mic. And I was like, wow, I wanna continue doing comedy, man. Let me hit this guy up. So I called the number and I'm like, hey, man, I'm a comedian. He's like, oh, bet, we need a host, man. You want to host tonight? And I was like, I just want to perform. And he was like, all right, well, come. I'm like, cool. I hang up the phone and I bought a notebook. And it was one of those small notebooks. I wrote like literally 65 jokes, like everything that I had ever thought was funny or made somebody laugh, I wrote it in this journal. Mm. And I brought the journal with me that night. So I get there and I'm like, what's up, y'all? They like, what's up? And I forget everything that I wanted to say. Them just saying what's up back. I was like, and I was like, hey, y'all mind if I get my notebook? They was like, go ahead. I'm like, cool. Hey, fellas, don't you hate when your girl don't let you look at another girl butt, man? Yeah, so when I be looking at girls' butts, I had dropped my keys. I was like, and then they giggle.
But it wasn't anything.
Oh, my God. That was, man, I finished, but I had already had the bug. So I was like, I'm going to keep going. So yeah. It wasn't amazing, but it was definitely something to keep me going, yo. That was my second experience doing comedy.
That's good. That's good. So did you have any bomb shows? You know, any shows?
Bomb like, oh, this is amazing. Or bomb, no,
bomb
like horrible.
Bomb like terrible.
You want to hear a terrible show? I'll give you a terrible
show.
Hear,
if that's like, what you want, worst, Nick Perdue, the worst well, story it, give it you've to. Ever had. Pete on stage or something crazy.
No. Atlanta, Georgia, 2006.
Okay.
6 months prior, I had got a chance to do Jamie Foxx's Laugh-A-Palooza and as the new faces. So, you know, we down there performing at all the clubs, and I performed at Uptown Comedy Corner. Mm. And they loved me. Like, it was great. I'm like, cool. So 6 months later, after the whole, you know, situation was over, I'm like, I'm going back to Uptown, perform again. They love me down there. You know,
right?
I get down there, and I take a buddy of mine from Detroit with me. Not gonna say his name, but he was younger in comedy than I was, so we were both gonna go up on stage. So the host at the time was Lil Duval. Lil Duval brings my man up like, yo, y'all ready to keep it going? Huh? All right, well, cool. Coming to the stage, I got my boy from Detroit. Give it up for... So he goes on stage, and he doesn't go straight into his set. What he does is dance to the music, and it's a girl in the audience. He's like, come up here, girl, and they dancing. And I'm like, what is he doing, right? So... They dance. He sits her back down. He gets into his first joke. They immediately start booing. They're like, boo! Wow. We ain't feeling you, though. Gets off stage. Lil Duval comes up. We got another one from Detroit. I'm like, oh, my God. So I go up there, and I did three jokes. The first joke rocked. I'm like, all right, I might have a chance. I'm getting my shoulders up. Good. So then the second joke does okay, but it does to where I'm like, all right, I gotta get this third joke immediately.
Yeah.
In the middle of my third joke, some dude stood up in the audience and was like, boo, and everybody start booing, right? So then the DJ plays, notice I'm looking up because I remember this, like this is last night. So the DJ plays Beyonce's To the Left, To the Left. But it was like gunshots. It was like, bah, bah, to the left, to the left. And it was like echoing in my head, yo. Everybody's booing, doing this and doing that. And I got off stage, man, and I felt bad because I wore a suit jacket. So I didn't usually wear suit jackets on stage. You know, you don't really have your confidence up. You wearing everything in the beginning. You think you look good.
Yeah.
So I had the suit jacket on, and I got off stage, and I was like, it's probably the suit jacket, the reason I bombed. Like, so since then... I don't think I've worn a suit jacket again on stage, like just to be on some comfortable stuff.
Oh,
but
funny.
That was the worst show. No, no, no. Oh, I got one worse than that, man.
Go ahead.
I'm at a spot out here. This is kind of like a 2-for-1 story. I'm at a spot out here because it was a week. It was the same week.
Okay.
On a Monday, I performed, and it was like this small open mic. Mm. And this guy in the front row wasn't laughing. Like, everybody else is laughing. I don't know why I got off my game just to listen to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, what's up, man? You ain't having a good time? He's like, you ain't funny. And I was like, shh. And this was my response. I can't make this up. My response was, your mother's a whore. I don't know why I said it. I have no idea why I said it to him, but I said your mother's a whore. When I said your mother's a whore, he went from this to... And he tried to rush the stage, right? Now, there's only, you know, it's a big stage, but there's only one way off. It's not like you can jump off this way or whatever. Yeah. So he comes up towards the stage. They stop him. And they're like, come on, Clayton. And they take me to this back room that has no exits. So he comes in the room. I'm like, man, what did I get myself into? I'm only like 20 at the time. So he's like, yo, man, I just lost my mom. I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I don't even know why I said your mother's a whore. He was like, all right, man. It's all good. And I was like, all right. But I didn't believe him because, you know, it was just too cool. I was like, should I leave or is somebody coming to kill me or whatever? So, you know, I was cool. That Thursday, of that week, performing at a spot. This is when I was doing open mic. You know, when you're younger, you do a lot of open mics or whatever. Yeah. I do this open mic. And I'm performing, and this guy's talking. I'm like, hey, man, you know, close your mouth, motherfucker. Like I just say, motherfucker, hey, man, motherfucker. He was like, I ain't put no dick in your mother. I'm like, nah, I didn't say you fuck my mama. I'm just saying. Anyway, sir, just close your mouth. He was like, who's the fuck you think he is? And he flipped the table over, right? This guy is like 6'5". He's got to be like 300 pounds, like big guy, Italian. Yeah. And this small white guy next to him was like 5'8". Maybe 100 pounds soaking wet. He's like, don't worry, I got him. I got him. I'm like, who's got you? Because this is an uncomfortable circumstance. So at that point, I'm on stage and I don't want to look, you know, like a punk. So I'm standing my ground, but I can't move my legs. I'm like, man, if he come up, this is probably going to be the end. So as he's walking towards me, one of my big boys, Doughboy, Doughboy comes up. He's like, no, I got you. I got you. And the dude leaves out. Now, the problem is I still couldn't move. So as I found out later, is this guy used to be Mike Tyson's bodyguard.
Wow.
He used to protect Mike. So I said to myself, how bad do you have to be to protect Mike Tyson? I ain't gonna be able to fight no bodyguard for Mike Tyson. So that was that, man. Those were the worst three shows I've ever had.
Wow. So you've definitely been through it.
Oh yeah, pay my dues, man. Pay my dues.
You know, from aside from like Bobby Lee getting punched on stage, but you
Bobby Lee got punched on stage. What? I'm not laughing, Bobby. I'm just it caught me off guard. What happened?
I'll let him tell the story.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Was this recent or years ago?
No, this is a while ago. This was before Mad TV. I want to say. Yeah.
Well, before Mad TV, he was just an Asian. You can't. I'm thinking this is recent or something.
Right. No, it's not like yesterday because you would have heard it. You know what I mean? Someone went down to the comedy store.
Yeah, so
you
know, I'm like, what?
Bobby Lee from Mad TV. Yeah, so you know.
Wow. Okay.
So how do you develop your jokes?
That's a very complex question with a very simple answer, man. The way that I come up with my jokes is more so observations. I more so talk about what's going on with me or, you know, how my outlook are on things. But a lot of things I actually write on stage. Okay. And a lot of times, and I was talking to my girl about this because I watched your interview with a couple other comics. And I'm like, I think the thing that other comics don't get when it comes to writing on stage is a lot of comics write on stage and they think that by them making fun of someone in the audience is coming up with the material. Mm-hmm. However, when you speak to somebody in the crowd, because everybody's so afraid to say, oh, man, this guy does crowd work. It's not crowd work when you actually are using the audience member to branch off from a thought that you've already created.
Yeah.
For example, if I'm on stage and I see, you know, like some beautiful young lady in the audience, I'm like, hey, how you doing? You all right? Okay, cool. I'm like, you're a beautiful young lady. She's like, oh, thank you. Like, yeah. See, that's what I don't like. Whenever you see a beautiful woman, because beautiful women, whenever they in the club and it goes into this thought that you've had already, instead of, hey, what do you do for a living? Oh, you probably do this. Or you probably, like, it's instead of antagonizing the audience, you're using them to make them realize that, yes, this is a live show, and I want you to be a part of this, but I don't want you to be a part of this in the sense that I'm making fun of you. I want you to feel like this is the show that if you would have missed it, no one could have told you what happened. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want it to seem staged. So everything looks as if I'm coming up with it right then.
Yeah.
But it's actually something that I've created and wrote before I've come here. It's just one of those things where it seems so off the head. So in you writing on stage, you might have a thought that you go into that somebody's giving you the idea for and you move forward from, as opposed to, oh, what y'all want to talk about? I hate hearing it. Because when you say what y'all want to talk about, not only are you wasting these people's money and time, but you're wasting the time that another comic who's very hungry and funny could have used to perform.
Yeah.
So I write a lot on stage, but a lot of things are more so in my head even before I go on stage. And they're elaborated on while I'm in the midst of performing.
Mm. But now, do you watch the crowd while other comedians are on stage before you go on stage?
Oh, yeah.
Help you out and see what you got?
Oh, yeah. You have to. A lot of comics that I've seen over the years, they don't watch the person in front of them. Mm. And that's very volatile because when you don't watch what happens before you, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do the joke about the milkshake. Then I'm going to hit them with the mall joke. Then I'm going to talk about weaves. Got them. They're going to stand an ovation.
Yeah.
And if you think like that while somebody's on stage, you're going to come on stage and miss something important that just happened.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times before I go on stage, something happens. Mm. Like whether a waitress falls or spills a drink on somebody, or a woman and her man get into a big argument. And what if I'm, what if I don't watch the guy in front of me and all of this happened and I come on stage, because the audience wants you to at least acknowledge what just happened.
Yeah.
So a girl and her man get into a fist fight, they get drug out. You come on stage like, yeah, so Obama won a third term. That's crazy. Right? What's up with Joe? They're like, you didn't just see what happened? You're like, no, what just happened? Now, the audience has more power than you. You always have to watch people who came before you just to know what's going on, if for nothing else. You don't have to address it, but just so you know the vibe.
Yeah.
If somebody does amazingly in front of you, you need to know. If somebody bombs in front of you, you need to know.
That's right. That's true. Yeah, and because like one thing that I've learned, too, is that like, because I've done this a couple times, but either like the person that's right before me or the person before the person before me, like they may have something that kind of works.
Yeah.
And then I can do something and it's like random. So like if my joke doesn't work, I could tag that joke that didn't work.
Yeah.
And that gets laughed.
Yeah. Like if somebody goes up and like cardigan sweater, crickets, right?
Yeah.
You do a joke that falls flat, cardigan sweater, rip.
Exactly.
People don't, I have conversations with a lot of my friends who are comedians, and not to say that a comedian won't have a bad show, because we're all destined to bomb and have standing ovations and have good sets. But every comedian needs to realize that there are mechanics to this.
Yeah.
There are mechanics for you to win. It's a science. Like stand-up comedy is a craft just like any other craft. However, it's one of those things that if you learn the small nuances, there are ways for you not to fail as often.
Yeah.
So I study the game. I'm literally a student of stand-up comedy to where I know what activates an audience, or what you should do after somebody gets a standing ovation in front of you, or what you should do after somebody bombs, or reading the energy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times, you know, you ever go to a show where they do two shows and the second show might not have enough people, so they keep the crowd from the first show over?
Yeah.
A lot of times you'll go up and you'll perform and you're like, what's up with y'all? They tired. But you can win them back if you know that they're tired.
Yeah.
Because if you go up there with low energy, they don't want it. They're already sitting there like this.
Exactly.
But if you go up there like, what's up, y'all? And like, hey, what's going on? Listen, hey, shake it off. Let's have some fun, man. Like, oh, what's this guy about to talk about?
Yeah.
Like, you getting them energized or whatever. It's so many tricks of the trade, man. And I only learned that from a lot of the older comics that I watch, or, you know, my big brothers and sisters that do it, that were able to give me some hints to make fewer mistakes that they made in the beginning of their careers.
So who are some of your comedic inspirations that, you know, either currently on the circuit now or people that have done it and passed on or whatever?
The list is far too long.
Top five.
I'll give you this. I'll give you from Detroit and I'll give you out here.
Okay.
Okay. The comedian who even started all of this for me in Detroit, Kool-Aid. First of all, folks, yes, stage names. A lot of people have stage names, but this guy is a genius when it comes to stand-up comedy. He taught me my confidence on stage. Confidence sells everything, because every comedian on stage, to be honest, comedians don't be talking about shit. Like, nothing that we talk about is any different from any other comedian. It's how you deliver it.
Yeah.
So that confidence is what he put in me to where if I don't believe it, you're not going to believe it.
Yeah.
Kool-Aid, a comedian named Barry Stalwart, Black Barry, one of the greatest off the top of his head comedians he can create out of nothing. And that made me want to do that. Howie Bell, somebody who can, like I just said, make his written material sound as if it came off the top of his head. To where it's a new show, to where people are like, man, you just came up with that? He's like, nah, I've been writing that. Whatever, man, I saw how you came up with it. That guy.
Yeah.
It's a new guy in Detroit named CP, comedian CP. This guy is funny, man. Like, if I were still in Detroit, and I'm not even a competitive person, if I was still in Detroit, he would help me up my game.
Yeah.
Just off seeing what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know, being a young comic, Heather J, Joshua Adams, Mike Larry, these people are hilarious. Now, in L.A., I would say my crew, you know what I mean? You always want to big up your friends. You're like, yeah, man, my friends are hilarious, man. These guys, man. Man, it's so funny, man. I was talking about this one thing. I look at a lot of the older comics here. Like, somebody that I love watching on stage is David Arnold.
David Arnold is
a technician when it comes to stand-up comedy. I literally saw him go from doing, you know, like cool in the clubs because he was just doing material, and then tell the truth, like when we start telling the truth of this material, skyrocket. I never saw him fail again once he starts telling the truth about, you know, his material. Tony Baker, somebody that I have to watch all the time. BT Kingsley. It's a lot more people, and whoever watches the interview probably gonna have a bone to pick with me, but it's such a long list of people that I have to watch perform. But you know, you would obviously say somebody like Kevin Hart because he's the only one in that slot right now that you kind of have to watch him.
Yeah.
But I will say he's an incredibly good guy. Like outside of stand-up comedy and anything, he's a good dude. And that's somebody that I'm glad is getting the opportunity to show the opposite of what we've had the years before, which is a black comedian can show up on time. They don't have to come to the set high or drunk. They're not in a paparazzi all the time for doing something bogus or talking badly about other comedians. Because as you know, when comedians have a problem with each other, we talk about it amongst ourselves. We don't really
go to TMZ.
You know what I mean? If we ever have a problem with each other, it's more so an ingrown thing and we handle it there. But in public, we're like, oh, yeah, that guy's amazing.
Yeah.
As it should be. You shouldn't downplay anybody. That's why I didn't understand the, and not to get off topic, but the Spike Lee, Tyler Perry thing. Like, you don't talk about him in front of people, man. Keep that on the low. Oh, like, what are you doing? That's good. And leave it at that.
And I think that's the thing too, like especially just in the black comedic circuit or just in the black Hollywood circuit, you know, I mean, it's like how black folks are just period. You know, we don't necessarily support our own as we should.
I'll give you this. The Arsenio Hall show was back.
Yes.
I love Arsenio Hall. He's a guy who has given me so many opportunities throughout the years that I wouldn't have even had the blessing to get if it wasn't for him. People who love his show, love his show. People who wouldn't have anything positive to say about it still want to talk about it. The same as Monique's show. When Monique's show was on, you got the people who love it, you got the people who hate it. And the problem is we don't do that with white shows. With white shows, we're always like, oh, I don't watch it. I don't have an opinion on it. I don't watch it.
Yeah.
But with black shows, it's, man, you know I don't like that show, man. I don't like that show because this happened and this happened. You don't downplay something because they're watching.
Yeah.
So when they're watching us downplay our own shows, why would they give us another one?
Yeah.
So it's like, keep it private. If you don't like a show, don't watch it. Don't have a negative opinion on one just to have a negative opinion. Where's your show? Where's your sitcom?
Yeah.
Where's your movie to be able to critique someone else's film? What would you have done differently? I don't see you having that opportunity.
Yeah.
And we're not going to have the opportunity if we continue to tear what opportunities people are having down. We love to build each other up just to knock it down.
Yeah.
When I got here, like I told you before we got on the air, I was homeless. I had no car. I had no money. Knew nobody. And it was literally the underdog story. And as soon as you start to go up, you start seeing your peers be like, well, you don't like him because he this or he that.
Yeah.
He think this and he think that. We're like, but I'm the same guy that we was in these open mics and, you know, struggling together. Exactly. Yeah, but you changed, man. What? I got money? Wasn't that the goal when
making
we were struggling?
Something of myself? Right?
Yeah, yeah, people hate that, man.
Yeah, you know, it's that crab in the barrel syndrome.
Yeah, which, I had this conversation with you ever seen Hot Tub Time Machine?
Yes.
Okay, the young white guy, I can't remember his name right now. The guy with the glasses.
Clark Duke. Which one?
What's his name?
Clark Duke?
Yes, yeah. Clark Duke. Had this conversation with this guy, like, literally, like, a week ago. We're in this bar off of Sunset. And he comes in, we're talking, and he's like, you know what the problem is, man? Black comics tear each other down, man. Where white comics, we tear each other down in private, but we build each other up. Like, they'll work together. It's not about egos.
Yeah.
In a black community, and this is not to talk badly about my people, it's just something to create a catalyst for change. We like to be the boss. We have to be ego-driven. Like, yeah, well, you're doing that. I'm trying to do this. Be like, yo, but if we work together, how about I lead this week and then you lead next week and we have that kind of, oh, that's cool. I'm going to do my own thing. No, you're like, all right, we'll never get anywhere. Whereas the Judd Apatow clique, they all did 40-Year-Old Virgin together, Freaks and Geeks. They did this movie together. And after this movie, after it blew up, Seth Rogen went to have his own career. Yeah. Jonah Hill had his own career. Jason Segel. The names continue to go.
Yeah.
Whereas we're more so like, oh, you're doing your movie? That's cool. I'm going to go ahead and do mine. You'd be like, why don't we just all invest our resources into doing this movie? And yeah, I'm the lead in this movie, but I don't have to be. I could be the mailman. And then after this movie, then we all, you know, from this light, go on to do our own projects.
Exactly.
Nobody wants that because everybody wants to be the initial leader.
Yeah. Well, you know, people don't like playing second fiddle.
Second fiddle is a state of mind. It's because true. If you say I don't like playing second fiddle, then that means that you've already created the losing syndrome in your mind.
Yeah.
The reason that I've always hung around older comics is because older comics teach you.
Mm.
They are teaching me more than being around my own classmates who know the same as me. It's the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I go to this guy who has 20 years worth of knowledge and that can give me this knowledge and then I can make fewer mistakes? Because that's going to help all of us grow.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to take this information and help these people over here.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to do it with the guys that's like, well, I want to lead. Then it's like, okay, you lead it. How are you going to lead it? I ain't thought about that. Of course you haven't thought about that because you're so focused on ego that nobody's thought about the bigger picture. So the people that get the bigger picture are the people that you end up working with and continuously trying to help build up.
Well said. Well said. Let's talk about this really quick and then we're going to play a clip.
Okay.
We have internet comedians are blowing up right now.
Oh my God.
Right?
Oh my God.
You know, you got the Twitter, you got the Vine, you got the Instagram, you got the YouTube and this and that. And then you have traditional stand-up. So what is your take? And cause I know, you know, Mitch Marchand did a thing about, he wrote an open letter, I believe, about, internet comedians versus stand-up comedians on laughingbarrel.com. So what is your take on internet comedians versus traditional stand-up comedians?
I'm going to give you my first thought, and I'm going to give you the truth of how I actually feel.
Okay.
My first thought, which was in late 2006, when everybody told me about Dane Cook blowing up off MySpace.
Mm.
I hadn't had the opportunity to check out Dane Cook, right?
Mm.
So they're like, yeah, man, Dane Cook is blowing up. Oh, he got everybody from MySpace, and this dude ain't even funny. I'm like, what? I hate that, man. These internet guys, yada, 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 right?
Mm.
Fast forward, I watch Vicious Circle, which to me, if you can put Vicious Circle next to You So Crazy, you could put it next to a Delirious, because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
As long as you watch and listen to his point of view and see what he was actually talking about, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So I say that to say, I get a chance to meet Dane Cook.
Mm.
One of the nicest guys in the world gives me advice. Just we sit and talk for like an hour. He had no reason to. I was a nobody, yada, yada, yada.
Mm.
Great guy. Fast forward now to the truth that we all know that there's no one way to succeed.
Yeah.
There's no one way to get into comedy. 10 years ago, it was, show up to these red carpets and schmooze and then maybe you'll get put in a movie and blow up. That was the Cat Williams. You know, he auditioned for Friday After Next, did the BET Comedy Awards, blew up.
Mm.
That's one way. Then you got somebody like Kevin Hart who worked on all of his marketing and put himself out there so much to where he focused on the people and the stand-up built him up. Bam, he's in there.
Mm.
Then you got Mike Epps, blew up. He's always done stand-up, but you saw him first and next Friday. Bam, blew up. Yeah. Then you look at somebody like Spoken Reasons.
Yeah.
YouTube guy, blew up. Now he's in a movie, he's doing his thing stand-up-wise, and he's on the road. Bam, blew up. There's no one way to get in, so why are we talking badly about another brother who got an outlet? Because even though I've been doing comedy for years, what if I had the opportunity to just do a walk-on run on a television show and it blew up? People who don't know that I've been doing stand-up for years are going to be like, oh, this guy came out of nowhere. He only got it because of this.
Yeah.
So it's not more so the battle of the internet comedian versus the standard comedian. It's more so the battle of the productive comedian versus the non-productive comedian.
Mm.
Because we can all say, man, I'm trying to get it from my stand-up, man. If you're a stand-up comedian now in 2013 and you don't write your own other outlets other than stand-up, you don't write your own films or television shows or have a radio show or do something on the internet or be able to move your own vehicles, you're not going to get anywhere. Stand-up comedy is not going to blow you up just off stand-up comedy unless you do something unless Kevin Hart comes to you because he's the only hot guy right now. Unless Kevin Hart comes to you and says, yo, we're doing a special together called Kevin Hart and Nick Perdue. It's not going to happen. But there are certain outlets that you can't be mad at another guy for getting in this way.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what his path is. His path might be to get in through the internet and produce movies like Robert Townsend and now we're all eating.
Yeah.
Compared to the stand-up guy who's going to feel like, I've been doing comedy so long, now it's my turn to eat. I'm not letting anybody on.
Mm.
So it's no one way to really get it. So I feel that however you can, get it. There's a guy named Andrew Batchelor.
Yeah,
I've been told he's a comedian, but I've seen a lot of his Vine videos.
Mm.
Funny.
Mm.
This guy deserves what he gets because even if they're 6-second videos, he's put the effort out there to make something of himself to be seen.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy's trying to be seen, but we're over here complaining. He deserves to get something because he's worked to do something.
Yeah.
Not to say these guys haven't worked, but they haven't been productive about getting their brand seen. Like, you look at this. These are my initials.
Yeah.
I have my name on my clothes. And that's not to talk badly about anybody who has something else on their clothes. It's just to say, what if during this interview, some bigwig sees me on this tape and says, oh, who's the guy with the initials on the shirt?
Yeah.
Let me look, check this guy out. Then I get a, I know this is clearly hard to say, but this is how things work. Oh, let me check this guy out. Oh, he's funny. Call him in for a meeting. We got a spot in this next movie. Maybe he could do it. Bam. Now I'm an internet guy.
Yeah.
But this is all off of me doing something different off of, oh, the guy with his own clothes. Then you'll see the guys, why is he wearing his own clothes? That's cocky. Wearing someone else's clothes is better than wearing my own name when you don't know me?
Yeah.
I know this sounds like rattling off. If any comedian is watching this and actually listening to what I'm saying, God bless you.
There you go. So let's go into this clip. This is because I've watched a few of your clips. I think this is probably one of my favorites. So
I don't even know what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. What a woman more than 5 years, she knows who the fuck you are inside and out. She knows how you lie. Like, we'll never know how women lie because they change shit up. They can make up a story out of nothing. They can literally leave another dude after fucking him and make you believe she didn't fuck nobody. Like, you be like, where you coming from? With the condom hanging out her ass. Where the fuck you coming from? Oh, this? My bad. Anyway. There was some construction going on down the street, and I know how the wind be blowing in North Hollywood, so the shit blew. I got a dress on, so it blew up. Wow. I don't know how it happened, but it just happened like that. You got anything else you want to ask me? Men have signs. Like, whenever I lie, I always start blinking and scratch the back of my fucking neck, and I didn't know that until she told me. Like, she was like, so where you coming from?
Wow. That is, thanks for playing that, man. Wow.
Again, like.
Wow.
I don't even know where you come up with stuff like that.
You know, that's, you know what's funny, man? And I know, you know, you heard me laughing.
Yeah.
I literally look at anything that I've done like an audience member. I don't even look at that like that's me. I'll literally be like, oh, I like that. Oh, I don't like that part. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm good. That's really good.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you guys can watch that entire clip. I mean, it has like over 200 something thousand views on it, but
yeah.
You know, it's like Clayton's funny.
Wow. So, thank you, man. You know what's even funnier about that? Like, even my statement of that, I had this conversation with my fiance earlier. We just got done watching one of the mini Kanye West interviews.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And after it went off, I was defending him heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Because something that he said that stood out, that I was raised as well, similar to that, which was my mother always told me, keep your head high.
Mm-hmm.
Always have confidence in yourself, because if you don't believe in you, nobody else will.
Yeah.
So imagine, you know, the first couple of years of your life before you go to school, you're only around your family members and people who know you, you know, people just like friends of the family or just your family.
Yeah.
So when you go to a preschool or a kindergarten or another school, that's when your first interaction with kids are.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see how other kids act. And you might see one kid with his head down, or another girl, she cries all the time. Like, these parents aren't bad parents, but they enforce different things into their children.
Yeah.
So when they see somebody who believes in himself or very confident about himself, it comes off as arrogant or cocky, or, oh, who does this guy think he is? But in actuality, you're so happy to be you that you were raised to always think that you're great.
Yeah.
So the minute that we stop thinking we're great, we're doing a counterclockwise motion in the opposite of what our parents taught us, depending on if your parents taught you that. So I love watching myself. It makes me want to do more.
Do you ever critique yourself?
All the time.
Be like, oh my God, like, why did I do that? Like, you're saying too many times.
You know what? Even looking at that clip, I was looking like, ah, man, that shirt was too short. Like, I'm looking at stuff like that. I'm like, man, I should have wore some bigger jeans. Like, everything, I'll look at small stuff. Or I had this habit of doing my lips like this whenever, I'll show you. I would do my lips like this whenever a camera's on. I'll be like, like, too often to where you suck your lips in, and that stuff plays differently on camera.
Yeah.
Because to you, you're like, oh, man, my lips are ashy. Let me lick my lips. But when you watch that, it takes away from your performance, because you're like, oh, man, this guy keeps sucking his lips. This doesn't look like what an actor would do. And if you look at films, you might look at I looked at a Denzel movie the other day, and his lips was just as ashy, but his lines carried over. You weren't even thinking about his lips, because it was like, bam, I just happen to know because I suck my lips in. But yeah.
Yeah. Although LL's lips are never ashy, because he's, you know.
Hella pause. Hella pause on that. But LL has made his brand from licking his lips.
You know. Lips, yeah. You're right. No, you're right. You're right. Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah, definitely, man.
About the whole pause there, right? Because to me, like, I feel that, like, saying pause is, like, the gay version of stop. So if you want, you know, you just say stop. Right? Because pause is just like slow down. Like it doesn't really mean like we're stopping.
This That's
is,
funny.
It's just slow down.
Have you said that on stage?
I'm going to you on, need to say on that Sunday.
That's funny.
So don't steal that shit.
That's funny, yo.
Because when think about good. It.
That is good. I got to create, man. That's a good point.
Because it is. Because everyone's like, oh, pause. But that's just as, you know. But again, that's,
slow down on the gay stuff. I still want more. But just calm down.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know.
Give me more a little bit later.
So let's talk about a couple of the things that you've done. So you've done Foxhole Radio. You've done Laugh-A-Palooza, like you said earlier. You did One Mic Stand. What else? You did Funny Business, The Funny Spot.
Oh, yeah. Mike Epps' Funny Spot was with Tony Rock on TV1.
How did you get on TV doing stand-up? Because I believe that's probably one of, like, every stand-up comedian's, one of their goals is to either get on, you know, BET Comic View or, you know, First Amendment or whatever it is, and to get on TV so you can, you know, get Comedy Central and get HBO specials. So how do you go about getting on TV?
Here's the funny thing. To go backwards but forward, we all thought, and you're, like, 2 years younger than me, we all thought that you go back and you look at Chris Tucker when he did Def Comedy Jam and he did Friday. Yeah. We all thought that he got Friday from Def Comedy Jam. Mm. When you start doing television and film, you start realizing how people really get opportunities and how they're unrelated, but to the general public that they are related. Mm. So for me, it was more so outside of just being God and blessings. It was being at the right place at the right time and having certain relationships. Mm. And, you know, for example, nothing of what I've had the opportunity to do so far has been, hey, let's get Clayton Thomas in for this. It's mm-hmm. never been, hey, let's, this guy's amazing, let's get him. It's been more so, hey, come in here. You available tomorrow? You're like, yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or a situation where I had a part writing in it, and then it was like, hey, you should do that role. You know what I mean? Yeah. But the stand-up situations with The Funny Spot, Ains Mitchell at the Comedy Union was starting this show on TV1, and he said to me, I think that you are a very funny young brother and you would do well at this. Mm-hmm. Would you like to do it? I'm like, yeah. And I was super nervous, but that was my first TV credit. That was 6 months of me being out here, which is funny how God and life works, because I made a deal with my mother at 21. Like, mm-hmm. my 21st birthday, my mother asked me what I wanted for my birthday. I said, well, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to Chicago, I'm going to New York, and then I'm going to Atlanta to make enough money so I can move to LA. Mm. So that's what I'm going to do this summer, I just wanted to tell you. So for my 21st birthday, my mother gave me $1,000 and said, go follow your dreams. Go to LA. And I was like, wow. So she said, buy an ended ticket, like, you know, two-way ticket. Mm. So when you're out in LA, if you're not on TV in a certain amount of time, you got to come back home. I was like, I'll make a deal with you. If I'm not on TV in a year, I'll come back to Detroit. And she says, okay. And the way that it worked was, you couldn't make the ticket a year. You had to make it 6 months. Mm. So I left in June 2007, and I said, the date was December 22nd of 2007. Mm. December 20th, we taped The Funny Spot. Wow. And I called my mom. I said, hey, I'm not coming back home. I got a chance to get on TV. And that was that. Yeah. So how do you get on TV? The way you get on TV is two ways. One, you create it yourself and you pitch it and you get some other people to have your same vision at heart and you go into a network and get it that way. Mm. Or you have the relationships to where you show up at the right time and you have the rapport with a person to be able to give you an opportunity. I would say do the first one. Mm. Create it yourself, and then by that, somebody will take notice. Because by you trying to be at the right place at the right time, it's harder than it sounds, because it's a fine line between being annoying and being cool.
Yeah.
So if you go up, you're like, hey, man, I just want to let you know I'm here. That's kind of annoying. Yeah. But if you're there, you're like, hey, what's up? You're going good. This is nice. Stick around for a minute. Kick it. Don't make it seem rushed, because people can smell desperate a mile away.
Yeah.
If I come to you right now, you got your show on Black Hollywood Live. I come up like, hey, what's up, Nick? Yeah, man, you're doing your thing in there, man. I want to come in there one time. You'd be like, oh, yeah, we'll get you in. Yeah, hey, whenever you need me, man. Right?
I'm ready.
Compare it to, hey, Nick, man, I love your show, man. It's going good. I watched the last couple episodes. You might be like, oh, thanks, man. We got to get you in there sometime. You're like, oh, man, just let me know. You're like, hey, can I get your email? You're like, yeah, all right, cool. Bam, hey, Nick, just reaching out. You know, want to see when's your availability? Maybe I can come on to the show. Yeah. You know, if a cat does that. I didn't do that, by the way, for people watching this. Like, oh, that's what you, da-da-da. But that's the way that I would go as far as creating your own thing or trying to just be cool.
Okay. And then just real quickly, you did 12 episodes never to be released of Clunkers. And so what was
that about? That was a blessing in disguise. That was starring the late Sherman Hemsley, Robin Thede of numerous TV shows, Carl Anthony Payne from Martin, David Faustino from Married with Children, and myself. And the producers of this show I worked with on Mike Epps' Funny Business down in Louisiana. So they called me. They said, hey, we want you to write on this show and write a part for yourself. I was like, oh, that's easy. So I was writing the show, and I came up with the character, and we did it. We shot 12 episodes, and they were like, yeah, it's going to the network. I knew it wasn't going to the network. I just wanted to make enough money to buy a car at the time.
Yeah.
So I did. But it was a great show. It was basically about a used car lot, used car salesman, and what they go through daily in the office. It was very funny. And obviously, with the passing of Mr. Hemsley, we weren't able to continue pushing forward with it. So I think it's on DVD now as a movie.
Oh,
I don't know how they did that. But in Walmart, Clunkers, if you check that out, you can catch me. But yeah.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. And so you have some good stuff coming up, right? Because we have a Love That Girl that premieres tonight, right?
Love That Girl starts premiering tonight. Yeah, I was I got a chance to be blessed to become one of the writers of that show. Special thanks to Mr. Bentley, Kyle Evans, Stacey Evans, Now Evans, the whole Evans family. Thank you guys for having me. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. They did 36 episodes.
Wow.
Which is unheard of.
Yeah, sure.
That's amazing, man. This is the fourth season, so that's going good. That as well as...
I think you have My Crazy Roommate, which is on Bounce TV, right?
Yes. Love That Girl is on TV One, premieres tonight, and on Bounce Television, My Crazy Roommate starts premiering on the 14th. And I got a chance to act in one of those episodes as a character called Skip Miles, who's a boss that sexually harasses. I don't want to get into it, but it's definitely a great show, man. They did a lot of episodes.
Greg, when he comes in, he's
great.
Later on.
He was hilarious, man. He was hilarious.
Okay. And then you said you just finished writing a feature film for Seven Ways Entertainment?
Yes, yes. The
Can't
film
tell
is
us
called
the title of it? Yeah.
In Vino. It's called In Vino. It's basically, if you've ever seen Clue,
yeah,
it's basically like set up like Clue as far as the mansion and everybody inside, but it's a murder, non-murder mystery story of betrayal. There are so many twists and turns in it, and I got hired to pen the script, and it was amazing of an experience, and it starts filming in January.
Okay,
so that's a great thing to add to the resume. Writing a feature film,
yeah,
that was a great accomplishment because you never get a chance to finish something. You're like, it's a good 20 pages. I'm done.
Yeah.
Then I wrote the entire 90 pages, which is a gladiator situation. I respected every film writer so much more after that.
Yeah,
man.
And last but not least, Arsenio Hall. We talked about him. So, and you're doing some stuff with for his show.
Yes, I had the opportunity to shoot a lot of Man on the Street stuff with the show, and it's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks because you never know when it's coming out because of they've shot so much stuff that you have to wonder. You like, I'm not on. Let me know. They've shot so much. Arsenio is like. I think Arsenio was like late 40s or something like that, or early 50s, but he literally works like a 19-year-old boy.
He's
like, this guy hammering stuff out, man. He's more focused than I've seen a first-year comedian, and this guy is a legend. You know what I mean? Like, when you get to legendary status, you just sit back. This guy is working. He's putting in work and going hard.
Well, and because not a lot of people can go off the air for 18 years and then come back and still have that fan base, you know, from 18 years. You know, and then now have a brand-new fan base.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because, like I told him, I was like, man, when you were on television, I was like 5, yo. Like, and I remember watching it. Like, my mom would just watch the show. And fast forward, and that shows you how life works. Fast forward, not only is the show back, but I had a blessing to be able to be on the show that I watched as a child with a legend that I watched as a child. And he's still cranking out hits. Yeah. It's an amazing situation, man. I couldn't have written it better myself. Literally.
That's good. It's exciting. It's exciting. If any other things that we didn't talk about coming up,
Is my Twitter on while we're having a conversation?
It is on while we're having a conversation.
Thank you. I want them young followers, man.
The big booty girl followers.
You know what I want? I want to get to the point, and shout out to my fiance, but I want to get out to the point where I have the like the King Magazine girls following me.
Yeah.
Like, you always want that. Like, no matter what. Like, you love your girl, but you like, this girl from King Magazine said hello.
Yeah.
Retweet. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But, that's the level I want to get to, where you have all models. I want to get to a point where I have models follow me and my fiance is like, so who is she? Like, I want that. I want her to tweet and tag both of us, like, tell this bitch stop tweeting you. You're like, okay, I think you should stop tweeting me. That'd be great.
There you go. All you got to do is just have them watch the show. You know, so just at the models about this interview, and then they'll start following you.
You know what's funny? I believe that because the production quality, first of all, AfterBuzz TV, Black Hollywood Live, the production quality for this show is amazing.
Yeah.
You got a hit, man. I congratulate you 1,000 times over. This is amazing. Thank you for even having me, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming in. And so where can all your fans follow you, find you, and stuff like that?
IamClaytonThomas.com. You'll find my Instagram, my Twitter, Facebook, everything. Hit me. Vine.
And then shows coming up, because I know you have one on the 27th of October. Yes. At Laugh. What is it?
It's at Inside Jokes.
Inside Jokes.
The Extravaganza. We've been doing it for over 2 years. We're in Hollywood right now. Inside Jokes, Hollywood and Highland. The tickets are only $10. Parking is $2. Then we got surprises, special guests. It's going to be crazy. October 27th. 8 p.m. Go to my site for tickets.
There you go. Thank you for coming in, Clayton. And as always, you can find me all over the internet at the Nick Perdue. Thank you guys for watching. I'll see you soon.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Dario Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.